Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Wednesday. And every Wednesday at 9:30, we say hello to John McClain from Houston. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I do want to start with something non-football. You probably know where I may be going with this. Pete Rose passes away at the age of 83. Does it finally happen? Does baseball finally let him into the Hall of Fame, where personally I believe he belongs?
No, I think he does too, but no, he's not going to get in anytime soon. I think way down the line when there's a new commissioner, it might be two or three from now, and the game is separated from the people that kept him out, he might have a chance on a veterans committee. But the thing, and I watched an interview yesterday, and I met Pete in 1976 when he was here two times, never covered him because I didn't cover baseball, but I loved talking to him, listening to him talk about baseball, how everybody loved how hard he played the game. But I saw a thing yesterday, an interview with a guy who had written a book on him back then and knew him really well, said when the initial investigation came out, and O'Dowd said it was the easiest investigation he'd ever done. He had spent 2 weeks and he had all these gamblers showing him receipts and everything where Pete had bet on baseball. And the commissioner, Bart Giamatti, and O'Dowd, they were ready to give Rose a suspension of about 6 months, which really would have been in the off season and would have allowed him to continue to coach, manage the Reds, but he would have had to come out and admit it on everything and fallen on the sword, just like I think if Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds had done that, I think they'd be in the Hall of Fame. But he was defiant and insisted he didn't bet on baseball, even though they had proof. In retrospect, he made a huge mistake. There was another time baseball was softening up a little bit, and then he came out in a book and said all the wrong things. Pete had a penchant for throwing out, saying the wrong things at the wrong time. And when he played, people paid attention to it, but, oh, that's just Pete being Pete. And after his career ended and he got caught, he couldn't have handled it worse. So not being in the Hall of Fame is his own fault. And I'm not talking about gambling on baseball, because we'd be stupid to think players hadn't been gambling for as long as you could gamble. And some more so than others. But I think he was his own worst enemy. And the fact that he didn't get in while he was alive was his own fault, which he admitted later.
Yeah, for sure. John McClain is with us now, shifting to the National Football League. Will Levis, you know, we've talked about this with you, that, you know, he won't slide. He's trying to make the extra plays. He's going to get himself hurt. Well, guess what happened on Monday Night Football? He got himself hurt diving for a first down and ultimately did not go back in the game. Mason Rudolph stayed in. They end up winning the game. What are your thoughts on it? But Brian Callahan has doubled down and said that as long as Will is healthy, he is our starter. So what do you make of those comments and Levis's injury?
Well, first of all, that pass he threw that was intercepted, he was the only person that didn't see the defensive back. And that was, you know, it was almost as egregious as those two brain dead plays he made earlier, to throw it right to the guy. And then I'm guessing if you read his lips, he told Callahan, I didn't see him. I didn't see him. Well, that, you know, my friends up there who are big Titans fans, they're frustrated like everybody else in that he continues to make mistakes that are almost inexplicable. And will he always do that? And I think they need to look at him as much as they can so they can be sure, beyond a shadow of a doubt, they don't think he's going to be able to stop making those kind of plays. And then the play where he dove for the first down, I have no problem with it. He's competitive. He didn't know he's going to come down his shoulder. In retrospect, he should have done like he's doing a belly flop in a swimming pool and come down on his chest and stomach. But you never make a play thinking you're going to get hurt. Now, the key is when he's healthy. Will that be 2 more weeks, 3 more weeks? Is he going to start after? They're in the bye week, right?
Yep.
And will he be okay after that? But the fact is, when Mason Rudolph came in and he's got more experience, he moved the team better, just like Andy Dalton has moved the offense better in Carolina since he replaced Bryce Young. And I don't think Mason Rudolph is the quarterback. But if Levis comes back and he plays and they continue to lose, keep thinking about the silver lining, which is a higher draft choice. And whether it's a higher draft choice or competing to sign Sam Darnold, if the Vikings will not commit long-term to him with number one pick J.J. McCarthy coming off of surgery, then Sam Darnold's going to be the hottest product on the open market if he keeps playing the way he has now, doing like Baker Mayfield did last year. And you see some quarterbacks today like Darnold, like Mayfield, like Geno Smith, and there's other. You look back and you go, huh, well, it must have been the organization and the coaches and the owners that screwed them up originally, because now they can play. And the fact of the matter is, it's a lot of it has to do with maturity, opportunity, the system, the players around them. And if the Titans, it looks like, we all know this, they're going to be in the market for a quarterback, barring a dramatic metamorphosis for Will Levis.
John, do you think it was smart of Callahan immediately after the game when asked about Will Levis? He said he's our starting quarterback. If he's healthy, he's our starting quarterback going forward. Because, you know, we got 12 days off to talk about it. Was that smart of Brian to go out and say, look, he's our guy going forward, instead of like, well, we'll see next week?
Absolutely, because it's going to be controversial enough. I thought that was exactly the way you handle it. That's like Texas. Steve Sarkisian, when Quinn Ewers, who's their starting quarterback, got hurt, and Arch Manning came in against the dog and had a great game, and he immediately said, Ewers is our starter when he's healthy. Never deviated from that. So it kind of quells the controversy, douses the fire. But when Levis comes back, if he doesn't play well, then it's going to heat up.
John, some of the friends I know that know Amy Adams and the family quite well say that she's a really big Will Levis fan. Would there be at some point where she would, and I hate that, I hope this isn't true, where she would tell Brian Callahan, you got to play Will Levis? Because you know what happens, John, when owners start meddling with personnel, it doesn't end well like that. So do you see something along those lines where she would say, look, tell Callahan, this is our guy?
Absolutely not. Anybody that thinks that doesn't know jack squat about Amy. Amy might love Will Levis, but it's not because of his mechanics. It's not because of anything other than she likes his personality, and I'm sure she loves a lot of her players. But no, Amy Adams Truck is not going to tell him who to play. Probably the only owner. Jerry Jones wouldn't do that. The only owner I can imagine do that would be David Tepper at Carolina.
Well, let me ask you this. When you covered Bud, did Bud meddle in starting lineups that you knew of?
No, he may have way back in the early 60s when he changed coach, like he changed his socks. And but no. Most owners want to know what's going on big decisions. But and they'll, if the GM, say Rand Carthon said, Amy, it looks like Callahan's going to bench Levis, and I know you'd want to know that. She'd say, okay. And she may want to know why, but she watches football. She's been watching football since she's 1 year old. She knows when somebody's making boneheaded plays.
We're talking to John McClain. I know winning helps this, but like I remember when the team first got here, you know, at least for 5-6 years, something like that, it felt like Bud really trusted what Floyd and Jeff were doing. And, you know, I think at times you felt that way with J-Rob and with Vrabel, and then all of a sudden it wasn't there anymore. What did you see in those early days that kind of helped build that trust between specifically the GM and Floyd Reese and Bud Adams?
They already had everything in place here. And everybody knew Jeff Fisher was a good coach. It just kills me that so many people judge Jeff on what happened with the Rams when he moved the franchise. And he took Jared Goff first, and then the next year Goff got to be good, and they gave all the credit to Sean McVay. Fact is, Jared Goff was a great quarterback, and he was probably going to be good in his second year. And but they had a proven coach who, and one of the things about Fisher, Jeff was really smart. He knew rules. He didn't see him with a lot of clock management issues or game decisions that he would make a decision. You go, oh my God, what is Fisher doing? He didn't have that. And Floyd had established himself He started in 93 when the cap took issue, and he didn't have a clue how to do the cap. And Steve Underwood was the cap expert. Floyd wanted to do it, and Floyd learned it with Underwood's help. But Floyd was a really good personnel man. He and Jeff didn't see eye to eye on a lot of issues, but they came to an understanding, and they got talent in there, as you guys know. So when you've got a proven coach that you can count on, it's easy for an owner to just sit back and relax. But it done that for a long time. When he had Bum Phillips, and other than Lad Herzig, his controller in his ear about Bum was destroying the franchise by trading all the draft picks for older players. And then when he fired Bum, he elevated Lad, a financial guy, to be the GM. But under Herzig's guidance, they went to the playoffs, started going every year. But once he had Bum and Herzig, Bud didn't get involved in a lot. And he may not pay a lot of what they wanted on contracts. Warren Moon said one time, when you go through a negotiation with Bud, it's almost not worth it when you finally get your money because of what he would put him through, but he would eventually cave in, and that was before the salary cap. So Bud didn't get involved. Since I started covering this team, my first training camp in 77, only thing I saw Bud get involved in was contract situations, never personnel.
We're talking to John McClain. We'll have more with him coming up next from Houston, including the latest on Davante Adams. Do that on the other side. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Continuing our conversation with John McClain from Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, Davante Adams wants a trade out of Vegas. I think they're going to give it to him. Teams are inquiring. Where do you think a good landing spot for Adams would be?
They've shown that they can win without him. They try to predicate their game on running the ball and a lot of short passes and throwing to tight end a lot. And so he's been troubled. It's interesting, Antonio Pierce, the head coach, liked the thing, a tweet, about talking about getting him out of there. That's gotten a lot of controversy. When Pierce was talking about injured players yesterday, he used Max Crosby's name and he used Adams's number. That's usually not a good sign. He got that hamstring injury in practice last week. Now he's already saying he can't play. The Jets would seem to be an obvious place, but right now, Wilson, their best receiver, is second behind Alan Lazard, who played with Rodgers with the Packers. New Orleans, Derek Carr is his best friend. Hadn't been the same with the Raiders since Carr was run out of town. The Cowboys could certainly use him to take the pressure off CeeDee Lamb because they can't run the ball. And some people are saying Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was in on Brandon Ayuk and couldn't pull it off, so would the Steelers be interested in bringing him there? It's kind of like the Texans and Stephon Diggs. Diggs has 3 touchdowns. He would have had 9 catches for 100 yards on game Sunday, but 2 of his catches were wiped out because of penalties. But he's done really well as a 30-year-old receiver, and I'm sure Adams would too. I mean, he's proven time and again he's a great receiver, but these receivers are unbelievable. This is his 3rd team, and all of them are because they're unhappy and they're not afraid to show it.
How has Diggs been to cover? I don't know how much you've dealt with him at all, but what's he been like?
I haven't dealt with him much because he doesn't talk much. If the rules are, if you want to press him, if the media – Pro Football Writers America wants to press it. If a guy didn't talk after a game, he can be fined $15,000. The media just has to decide they want to file a complaint with the Pro Football Writers America, and then they go to the league office. They send them a letter saying if you don't cooperate and follow the rules, which is you have to talk after a game, and unless you're injured, then you have to talk at least once during the week. But most media won't do that. And if Stephon Diggs started to do that on a consistent basis, I've already told him I'm going to file a deal with the league because I'm a stickler about players following their league-mandated obligations to do interviews with the media that can do it for the fans and the sponsors and suite owners and everybody else. So Diggs has been great for the players. They love the guy, and they voted him a captain. He made a play Sunday where they were supposed to have the Philly special. He saw it was looked like it was going to be covered, so he found a lane to zigzag through defenders to score a touchdown, and it was the first rushing touchdown of his career. So he's been worth it. Tank Dell was out Sunday, could miss Sunday's game against the Bills, but if they've got Nico Collins, who is having an incredible season, and Diggs, that's not a bad combination.
John, I'm sure you've watched a lot of football already this year like we have, when we're a quarter-ish way through the season, but watching the Ravens on Sunday night, John, might have been the most complete football game I've seen from a team so far this season. The Ravens play like that the rest of the year. Are they the team to beat?
Well, I hope so, since I picked them to win the And I said it was because I thought Derrick Henry would be the best free agent signing of the offseason. Now, there's another team. What if they added Devontae Adams to go with Flowers and I forgot the tight end's name.
Adams.
They would have a great – Mark Andrews. They'd have a great threesome there, plus Derrick Henry, plus Lamar. They'd almost be unstoppable. Now, they got off to a slow start, and part of the reason, they were trying to ingratiate Henry into their scheme, and they've done it pretty well. And I know here they're saying, well, the Texans host the Ravens on Christmas Day, and they're hoping, well, they hope Henry keeps getting a lot of carries for a lot of 87-yard runs, and maybe he'll be out of gas by the time Christmas rolls around. But I don't think so. The way they dominated the Bills in alarming fashion, if you're Buffalo – you know, everybody wants this game Sunday to be a Stephon Diggs game, but when you were as bad as the Bills were, and the Texans certainly were not all that impressive in beating the Jaguars by four, you know, you got other things to worry about than a receiver who got traded.
Yeah, absolutely. John, I got a few friends of mine who are obnoxious Washington fans, and they're living life now. And let me ask you this. Is it because of Dan Quinn, or is it because of Jaden Daniels, or is it both?
Well, my wife grew up there, and she's an obnoxious Redskins fan. Will not call them anything else. And of course, people are excited about it. Cliff Kingsbury's the unsung hero there. You know, Chicago interviewed him. I heard the other day for 6 hours about being their coordinator and calling plays again for Caleb Williams, like he did last year for Lincoln Riley. And for whatever reason, they didn't hire him, and Dan Quinn did. And as smart of Kingsbury, who wants to be a head coach again, to go with a defensive head coach because they don't call plays and they don't meddle on the offense most of the time. And so Kingsbury has done a great job with Daniels. And I think Quinn, of course, should get some credit. But the job Kingsbury is doing coaching that kid, and he's off to a historic start, not just for a rookie. Can they win a division? I'm sure they can, because Philadelphia and the Cowboys are not anywhere near what they were last year. But remember, every season, like last season with the Eagles, with the Jaguars, there are teams that get off to great starts, and we anoint them as Super Bowl contenders, and then they go down the toilet. And then there's others that don't get off to great starts and rebound over the last 9 or 10 games. So we have to always keep that in mind.
John, this is for me, not really anybody else, but I'd like to take deep dives on quarterbacks in the National Football League, especially the ones that played in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. What was it like, your reaction, when Bud signed Ken Stabler, or traded for him, and then Archie Manning comes there? What was that like covering those guys at the tail end of their career?
They brought Archie Manning in because they had Oliver Luck and Gifford Nielsen, who was a better TV broadcaster than a quarterback after his career ended. And that's one reason they went all in on Warren Moon. It was 28-year-old rookie coming from Canada and was the highest paid player in history when they signed him, 5 years and $5 million. And then Pastorini had been the third overall pick in 71, went through terrible seasons, back-to-back 1-13s, that he had ended up having 33 operations, but Ooh. He got booed when they were good and had been to the AFC Championship game in 78. Pastorini got hurt in 79, and the fans cheered here. And he told Bum Phillips, "I want you to trade me." It was before the deadline. And Bum said, "Write it out, and after the season, if you want to be traded, I'll give you my word." So they were coming back from Pittsburgh after losing a second consecutive AFC championship game. Back then, you could drink all you wanted on a plane. Both of them had a lot of drinks. And Pastorini went to Bum, and he said, I want out of here. And he should have said, well, let's wait a couple of weeks and sleep on it. Instead, he said, okay. And back then, players disappeared after the season and went off on vacations. So they traded him for Stabler, which is still the biggest one-on-one trade of quarterbacks in NFL history.
Wow.
Stabler had a great year in 1980. I can tell you 2 hours worth of snake stories. About 5 minutes would be tellable, and the rest would not be. But it was not fun. Pastorini was wild enough, but, man, when Stabler came in here in 1980, Urban Cowboy came out, Gillies was big, everybody, including me, wore cowboy hats with bell feathers and boots, fancy boots, and it was fun, and covering Snake was fun. Then when Bum Phillips got fired after the season, they sent Snake over to New Orleans with him. But, man, oh, man, I had a blast that season.
That's right. Awesome. Thank you.
I love it. I love it when you tell these stories. John, appreciate it as always. We'll talk next week.
God, sounds great. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. John McClain, HoustonTexans.com. That's where you can find his work, and every Wednesday at 9:30. Coming up next, there's a big show coming up tomorrow at the Ryman Auditorium. Comedian Brad Williams will be in performance. He's going to join us on the show next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.